Air is free. Sorry, you have free air here, don't you? I mean, our tubes were built by companies who put up money and are downright nasty about expecting it back, and then some. Public schools. There are schools in all Warrens, and I never heard of them turning away pupils, so I guess they are public. But they pay well, too. Because anyone in Luna who knows something useful, and is willing to teach it, charges all the traffic will bear. I went on. Let's see what else. Social Security. I'm not sure what that is, but whatever it is, we don't have it. Pensions. You can buy a pension. Most people don't. Most families are large, and old people, say 100 and up, either fiddle along at something they like, or sit and watch video, or sleep. They sleep a lot. Actors, say 120.
Sir, excuse me. Do people really live as long on the moon as they say?
I looked surprised, but wasn't. This was a stimulated question, for which an answer had been taped. Nobody knows how long a person will live in Luna. We haven't been there long enough. Our oldest citizens were born Earthside. It's no test. So far, no one born in Luna died of old age, but that's still no test. They haven't had time to grow old yet, less than a century. But, take me, madam. How old would you say I am? I'm authentic Looney, third generation.
Truthfully, Colonel Davis, I was surprised at your youthfulness, for this mission, I mean. You appear to be about 22. Are you older? Not much, I fancy.
Madam, I regret that your local gravitation makes it impossible for me to bow. Thank you. I've been married longer than that.
What? Oh, you're jesting.
Madam, I would never venture to guess a lady's age, but if you will emigrate to Luna, you will keep your present youthful loveliness much longer and add at least 20 years to your life. I looked at List. I'll lump the rest of this together by saying we don't have any of it in Luna, so I can't see any reason to pay taxes for it. On that other point, sir, surely you know that the initial cost of the colonies has long since been repaid several times over, through grain shipments alone. We are being bled white of our most essential resources, and not even being paid an open market price. That's why the Lunar Authority is being stubborn. They intend to go on bleeding us. The idea that Luna has been an expense to Terra, and the investment must be recovered, is a lie, invented by the Authority to excuse their treating us as slaves. The truth is that Luna has not cost Terra one dime this century, and the original investment has long since been paid back. He tried to rally. Oh, surely you're not claiming that the lunar colonies have paid all the billions of dollars it took to develop spaceflight? I could present a good case. However, there is no excuse to charge that against us. You have spaceflight, you people of Terra. We do not. Luna has not one ship. So why should we pay for what we've never received? It's like the rest of this list. We don't get it. Why should we pay for it? Had been stalling, waiting for a claim that Prophet told me I was sure to hear, and got it at last.
Just a moment, please, came a confident voice. You ignored the two most important items on that list, police protection and armed forces. You boasted that you were willing to pay for what you get. So how about paying almost a century of back taxes for those two? It should be quite a bill. Quite a bill.
He smiled smugly. Wanted to thank him. Thought Proof was going to chide me for failing to yank it out. People looked at each other and nodded. Pleased I had been scored on. Did best to look innocent. Please? Don't understand. Luna has neither police nor armed forces.
You know what I mean. You enjoy the protection of the peace forces of the Federated Nations. And you do have police, paid for by the Lunar Authority. I know, to my certain knowledge, that two phalanges were sent to the moon less than a year ago to serve as policemen.
Oh, I sighed. Can you tell me how FN peace forces protect Luna? I did not know that any of your nations wanted to attack us. We are far away and have nothing anyone envies. Or did you mean we should pay them to leave us alone? If so, there is an old saying that once you pay Dengelt, you never get rid of the Dane. Sir, we will fight FN armed forces if we must. We shall never pay them. Now about those so-called policemen. They were not sent to protect us. Our Declaration of Independence told the true story about those hoodlums. Did your newspapers print it? Some had, some hadn't, depending on country. They went mad and started raping and murdering. And now they are dead. So don't send us any more troops. Was suddenly tired and had to leave. Really was tired. Not much of an actor. And making that talk come out way Proof thought it should was strain. 18. Was not told till later that I had received an assist in that interview. Lead about police and armed forces had been fed by Stooge. Stu Lejoie took no chances. But by time I knew, I had had experience in handling interviews. We had them endlessly. Despite being tired, was not through that night. In addition to press, some Agra diplomatic corps had risked showing up. Few, and none officially, even from Chad. But we were curiosities, and they wanted to look at us. Only one was important, a Chinee. Was startled to see him. He was Chinese member of committee. I met him simply as Dr. Chan, and we pretended to be meeting first time. He was that Dr. Chan, who was then senator from Great China and also Great China's longtime number one boy in Lunar Authority, and much later, vice chairman and premier, shortly before his assassination. After getting out point I was supposed to make, with bonus through others that could have waited, I guided chair to bedroom and was at once summoned to Proof's. Manuel, I'm sure you noticed our distinguished visitor from the Middle Kingdom. Old Chinese from committee? Try to curb the loony talk, son. Please don't use it at all here, even with me. Yes, he wants to know what we meant by tenfold or a hundredfold. So tell him. Straight or swindle? The straight. This man is no fool. Can you handle the technical details? Done my homework, unless he's expert in ballistics. He's not. But don't pretend to know anything you don't know, and don't assume that he's friendly. But he could be enormously helpful if he concludes that our interests and his coincide. But don't try to persuade him. He's in my study. Good luck. And remember, speak standard English. Dr. Chan stood up as I came in. I apologized for not standing. He said that he understood difficulties that a gentleman from Luna labored under here, and for me not to exert myself. Shook hands with himself, and sat down. I'll skip some formalities. Did we or did we not have some specific solution when we claimed there was a cheap way to ship massive tonnage to Luna? Told him was a method. Expensive in investment, but cheap in running expenses.
It's the one we use on Luna, sir. A catapult. An escape speed induction catapult.
His expression changed not at all.
Colonel, are you aware that such has been proposed many times and always rejected for what seemed good reasons? Something to do with air pressure?
Yes, Doctor. But we believe, based on extensive analysis by computer and our experience with catapulting, that today the problem can be solved. Two of our larger firms, the Luna Ho Company and the Bank of Hong Kong in Luna, are ready to head a syndicate to do it as a private venture. They would need help here on Earth, and might share voting stock, though they would prefer to sell bonds and retain control. Primarily, what they need is a concession from some government, a permanent easement on which to build the catapult. Probably India. Above was a set speech. Luna Ho Co. was bankrupt if anybody examined books, and Hong Kong Bank was strained. Was acting as central bank for country undergoing upheaval. Purpose was to get in last word. India. Proof had coached me that this word must come last.
Dr. Chan answered,
Never mind financial aspects. Anything which is physically possible can always be made financially possible. Money is a bugaboo of small minds. Why do you select India?
Well, sir, India now consumes, I believe, over 90% of our grain shipments.
93.1%.
Yes, sir. India is deeply interested in our grain, so it seemed likely that she would cooperate. She could grant us land, make labor and materials available, and so forth. But I mentioned India because she holds a wide choice of possible sites. Very high mountains, not too far from Terra's equator. The latter is not essential, just helpful. But the site must be a high mountain. It's that air pressure you spoke of, or air density. The catapult head should be at as high altitude as feasible, but the ejection end, where the load travels over 11 kilometers per second, must be an air so thin that it approaches vacuum, which calls for a very high mountain. Take the peak Nanda Devi, around 400 kilometers from here. It has a railhead 60 kilometers from it, and it rolled almost to its base. It is 8,000 meters high. I don't know that Nanda Devi is ideal. It is simply a possible site with good logistics. The ideal site would have to be selected by Terran engineers.
A higher mountain would be better?
Oh, yes, sir, I assured him. A higher mountain would be preferred over one nearer the equator.
The catapult can be designed to make up for loss in free ride from Earth's rotation. The difficult thing is to avoid so far as possible this pesky thick atmosphere.
Excuse me, Doctor. I did not mean to criticize your planet.
There are higher mountains. Connor, tell me about this proposed catapult.
I started to. The length of an escape speed catapult is determined by the acceleration. We think, or the computer calculates, that an acceleration of 20 gravities is about optimum. For Earth's escape speed, this requires a catapult 323 kilometers in length. Therefore...
Stop, please. Connor, are you seriously proposing to bore a hole over 300 kilometers deep?
Oh, no. Construction has to be above ground to permit shockwaves to expand. The stator would stretch nearly horizontally, rise perhaps 4 kilometers in 300, and in a straight line, almost straight, as Coriolis acceleration and other minor variables make it a gentle curve. The lunar catapult is straight so far as the eye can see, and so nearly horizontal that the barges just miss some peaks beyond it.
Oh, I thought that you were overestimating the capacity of present-day engineering. We drilled deeply today, not that deeply. Go on.
Doctor, it may be that common misconception which caused you to check me is why such a catapult has not been constructed before this. I've seen those earlier studies. Most assume that a catapult would be vertical, or that it would have to tilt up at the end to toss the spacecraft into the sky, and neither is feasible nor necessary. I suppose the assumption arose from the fact that your spaceships do boost straight up, or nearly. I went on. But they do that to get above atmosphere, not to get into orbit. Escape speed is not a vector quantity. It is scalar. A load bursting from a catapult at escape speed will not return to Earth no matter what its direction. Two corrections. It must not be headed toward the Earth itself, but at some part of the sky hemisphere. And it must have enough added velocity to punch through whatever atmosphere it still traverses. If it is headed in the right direction, it will wind up at Luna.
Ah, yes. Then this catapult could be used but once each lunar month?
No, sir. On the basis on which you were thinking, it would be once every day, picking the time to fit where Luna will be in her orbit. But in fact, or so the computer says, I'm not an astronautics expert. In fact, this catapult could be used almost any time, simply by varying ejection speed, and the orbits could still wind up at Luna.
I don't visualize that.
Neither do I, Doctor, but, excuse me, but isn't there an exceptionally fine computer at Peiping University?
And if there is?
Did I detect an increase in bland inscrutability? A cyborg computer? Pickled brains? Are lab ones aware? Horrible, either way. Why not ask a top-notch computer for all possible ejection times for such a catapult, as I have described? Some orbits go far outside Luna's orbit before returning to where they can be captured by Luna, taking a fantastically long time. Others hook around Terra, then go quite directly. Some are as simple as the ones we use from Luna. There are periods each day when short orbits may be selected.
But a load is in the catapult less than 1 minute.
The limitation is how fast the loads can be made ready. It is even possible to have more than one load going up the catapult at a time if the power is sufficient and computer control is versatile. The only thing that worries me is, these high mountains, they are covered with snow?
Usually, he answered. Ice and snow and bare rock.
Well, sir, being born in Luna, I don't know anything about snow. The stator would not only have to be rigid under heavy gravity of this planet, but would have to withstand dynamic thrusts at 20 gravities. I don't suppose it could be anchored to ice or snow.
Or could it be?
I'm not an engineer, Colonel, but it seems unlikely. Snow and ice would have to be removed and kept clear. Weather would be a problem, too.
Weather I know nothing about, Doctor.
All I know about ice is that it has a heat of crystallization of 335 million joules per ton.
I have no idea how many tons would have to be melted to clear the site, or how much energy would be required to keep it clear. But it seems to me that it might take as large a reactor to keep it free of ice as to power the catapult.
We can build reactors. We can melt ice. Our engineers can be sent north for re-education until they do understand ice.
Dr. Chen smiled, and I shivered.
However, the engineering of ice and snow was solved in Antarctica years ago.
Don't worry about it.
A clear solid rock site about 350 kilometers long at a high altitude. Anything else I should know?
Not much, sir. Melted ice could be collected near the catapult head, and thus be the most massive part of what will be shipped to Luna. Quite the saving.
Also, the steel canisters would be reused to ship grain to Earth, thus stopping another drain that Luna can't take. No reason why a canister should not make the trip hundreds of times. At Luna, it would be much the way barges are now landed off Bombay. Solid charge retro rockets programmed by ground control. Except that it would be much cheaper. 2.5 kilometer seconds change of motion versus 11 plus, a squared factor of about 20. But actually even more favorable, as retros are parasitic weight, and the payload improves accordingly. There is even a way to improve that.
How?
Doctor, this is outside my specialty. But everybody knows that your best ships use hydrogen as reaction mass heated by a fusion reactor. But hydrogen is expensive in Luna, and any mass could be reaction mass. It just would not be as efficient. Can you visualize an enormous brute force space tug designed to fit lunar conditions? It would use raw rock, vaporized, as reaction mass, and would be designed to go up into parking orbit, pick up those shipments from Terra, bring them down to Luna's surface. It would be ugly, all the fancy stripped away. Might not be manned even by a cyborg. It can be piloted from the ground by computer.
Yes, I suppose such a ship could be designed. But let's not complicate things. Have you covered the essentials about this catapult?
I believe so, Doctor. The site is the crucial thing. Take the peak Nanda Devi. By the maps I have seen, it appears to have a long, very high ridge sloping to the west for about the length of our catapult. If that is true, it would be ideal, less to cut away, less to bridge. I don't mean that it is the ideal site, but that is the sort to look for. A very high peak with a long, long ridge west of it.
I understand.
Dr. Chen left abruptly. Next few weeks, I repeated that in a dozen countries, always in private, and with the implication that it was secrets. All that changed was name of mountain. In Ecuador, I pointed out that Chimborazo was almost on the equator. Ideal. But in Argentina, I emphasized that their Aconcagua was highest peak in Western Hemisphere. In Bolivia, I noted that Alto Plano was as high as Tibetan Plateau. Almost true. Much nearer equator, and offered a wide choice of sites for easy construction leading up to peaks comparable to any on Terra. I talked to a North American who was a political opponent of that chum who had called us rabble. I pointed out that, while Mount McKinley was comparable to anything in Asia or South America, there was much to be said for Mauna Loa, extreme ease of construction. Doubling G's to make it short enough to fit, and Hawaii could be spaceport of world. Whole world. For we talked about day when Mars would be exploited, and freight for 3, possibly 4 planets would channel through their big island. Never mentioned Mauna Loa's volcanic nature. Instead, I noted the location permitted an aborted load to splash harmlessly into Pacific Ocean. In Soviet Union, was only one peak discussed. Lenin, over 7,000 meters, and rather too close to their big neighbor. Kilimanjaro, Popocatepetl, Logan, El Libertado, my favorite peak changed by country. All that we required was that it might be highest mountain in hearts of locals. I found something good to say about modest mountains of Chad when we were entertained there, and rationalized so well I almost believed it. Other times, with help of leading questions from Stu Lajoie's stooges, I talked about chemical engineering, of which I know nothing but had memorized facts, on surface of Luna, where endless free vacuum and sun power and limitless raw materials and predictable conditions permitted ways of processing expensive or impossible Earthside. When they arrived, that cheap shipping both ways made it profitable to exploit Luna's virgin resources. Was always the suggestion that entrenched bureaucracy of lunar authority had failed to see great potential of Luna. True. Plus answer to a question always asked, which answer asserted that Luna could accept any number of colonists. This also was true, although never mentioned that Luna, yes, that sometimes Luna's loonies, killed about half of new chums. But people we talked to rarely thought of immigrating themselves. They thought of forcing or persuading others to emigrate to relieve crowding and to reduce their own taxes. Kept mouth shut about fact that half-fed swarms we saw everywhere did breed faster than even catapulting could offset. We could not house, feed, and train even 1 million new chums each year, and 1 million wasn't a drop on Terra. More babies than that were conceived every night. We could accept far more than would emigrate voluntarily, but if they used forced immigration and flooded us, Luna has only one way to deal with a new chum. Either he makes not one fatal mistake in personal behavior or in coping with environment that will bite without warning, or he winds up as fertilizer in a tunnel farm. All that immigration in huge numbers would mean would be that a larger percentage of immigrants would die, too few of us to help them pass natural hazards. However, proof did most talking about Luna's great future. I talked about catapults. During weeks we waited for committee to recall us, we covered much ground. Stu's men had things set up, and only question was how much we could take. We guessed that every week on Terra chopped 1 year off our lives, maybe more for Prof. But he never complained, and was always ready to be charming at one more reception. We spent extra time in North America, date of our Declaration of Independence, exactly 300 years after that of North American British colonies, turned out to be wizard propaganda, and Stu's manipulators made most of it. North Americans are sentimental about their United States, even though it ceased to mean anything once their continent had been rationalized by FN. They elect a president every 8 years. Why? Could not say. Why do British still have queen? And boast of being sovereign. Sovereign, like love, means anything you want it to mean. It's a word in dictionary between sober and suzzled. Sovereignty meant much in North America, and 4th of July was a magic date. 4th of July League handled our appearances. and Stu told us that it had not cost much to get it moving, and nothing to keep going. League even raised money used elsewhere. North Americans enjoy giving no matter who gets it. Farther south, Stu used another date. His people planted idea that coup d'etat had been 5 May instead of 2 weeks later. We were greeted with Cinco de Mayo, Libertad, Cinco de Mayo. I thought they were saying thank you. Proof did all talking. But in 4th of July country, I did better. Stu had me quit wearing a left arm in public. Sleeves of my costumes were sewn up so that stump could not be missed, and word was passed that I had lost it fighting for freedom. Whenever I was asked about it, all I did was smile and say, "See what comes of biting nails?" Then change subject. I never liked North America, even first trip. It is not most crowded part of Terra. Has a mere 1 billion people. In Bombay, they sprawl on pavements. In Great New York, they pack them vertically. Not sure anyone sleeps. Was glad to be in invalid's chair. It's mixed up place another way. They care about skin color, huh, by making point of how they don't care. First trip I was always too light or too dark, and somehow blamed either way, and was always being expected to take stand on things I have no opinions on. Bog knows I don't know what genes I have. One grandmother came from a part of Asia where invaders passed through as regularly as locusts, raping as they went. Why not ask her? Learned to handle it by my second Makey Learney, but it left a sour taste. I think I prefer a place as openly racist as India, where if you aren't Hindu, you're nobody. Except that Parsis look down on Hindus, and vice versa. However, I never really had to cope with North America's reverse racism when being Colonel O'Kelly Davis, hero of lunar freedom. We had swarms of bleeding hearts around us, anxious to help. I let them do two things for me, things I had never had time, money, or energy for as a student. I saw Yankees play and visited Salem. Should have kept my illusions. Baseball is better over video. You can really see it and aren't pushed in by 200,000 other people. Besides, somebody should have shot that outfield. I spent most of that game dreading moment when they would have to get my chair out through crowd. That, and assuring host that I was having a wonderful time. Salem was just a place, no worse and no better than rest of Boston. After seeing it, I suspected that they had hanged the wrong witches. But day wasn't wasted. I was filmed laying a wreath on a place where a bridge had been in another part of Boston. Concord. And made a memorized speech. Bridge is still there, actually. You can see it, down through glass. Not much of a bridge. Prof enjoyed it all, rough as it was on him. Prof had great capacity for enjoying. He always had something new to tell about great future of Luna. In New York, he gave managing director of a hotel chain, one with a rabbit trademark, a sketch of what could be done with resorts in Luna, once excursion rates were within reach of more people. Visits too short to hurt anyone. Escort service included. Exotic side trips. Gambling. No taxes. Last point grabbed attention. So Prof expanded it into longer old age theme. A chain of retirement hostels where an earthworm could live on Terran old age pension and go on living 20, 30, 40 years longer than on Terra. As an exile, but which was better? A live old age in Luna or a funeral crypt on Terra? His descendants could pay visits and fill those resort hotels. Prof embellished with pictures of nightclubs with acts impossible in Terra's horrible gravity. Sports to fit our decent level of gravitation. Even talked about swimming pools, and ice skating, and possibility of flying. Thought he had tripped his safeties. He finished by hinting that Swiss cartel had tied it up. Next day he was telling foreign divisions manager of Chase International Panagra that a Luna City branch should be staffed with paraplegics, paralytics, heart cases, amputees, others who found high gravity a handicap. Manager was a fat man who wheezed. He may have been thinking of it personally, but his ears picked up at no taxes. We didn't have it all our own way. News was often against us, and we're always hecklers. Whenever I had to take them on without Proof's help, I was likely to get tripped. One man tackled me on Proof's statement to committee that we owned grain grown in Luna. He seemed to take it for granted that we did not. Told him I did not understand question. He answered, "Isn't it true, Colonel, that your provisional government has asked for membership in Federated Nations?" Should have answered no comment, but fell for it and agreed. "Very well," he said. "The impediment seems to be the counterclaim that the moon belongs to the Federated Nations, as it always has, under supervision of the Lunar Authority. Either way, by your own admission, that grain belongs to the Federated Nations, in trust." I asked how he reached that conclusion. He answered, "Colonel, you style yourself Undersecretary of Foreign Affairs. Surely you are familiar with the Charter of the Federated Nations." I had skimmed it. "Reasonably familiar," I said. Cautiously, I thought. "Then you know that the first freedom guaranteed by the Charter and its current application through F&A Control Board Administrative Order Number 1176, dated 3 March of this year, you concede, therefore, that all grain grown on the moon in excess of the local ration is ab initio and beyond contest the property of all, title held in trust by the Federated Nations through its agencies for distribution as needed." He was writing as he talked. "Have you anything to add to that concession?" I said, "What in Bug's name are you talking about?" Then, "Come back, I haven't conceded anything." So Great New York Times printed, "Lunar Undersecretary says food belongs to hungry." New York Today. O'Kelly Davis, soi-disant, Colonel of the Armed Forces of Free Luna, here on a junket to stir up support for the insurgents in the FN Lunar Colonies, said in a voluntary statement to this paper that the Freedom from Hunger Clause in the Grand Charter applied to the lunar grain shipments. I asked Prof how should have handled. "Always answer an unfriendly question with another question," he told me. "Never ask him to clarify. He'll put words in your mouth. This reporter, was he skinny? Ribs showing?" "No, heavy set." "Not living on 1,800 calories a day, I take it, which is the subject of that order he cited. Had you known, you could have asked him how long he had conformed to the ration and why he quit, or asked him what he had for breakfast and then looked unbelieving no matter what he answered. Or, when you don't know what a man is getting at, let your counter-question shift the subject to something you do want to talk about. Then, no matter what he answers, make your point and call on someone else. Logic does not enter into it, just tactics." "Prof, nobody here is living on 1,800 calories a day. Bombay, maybe. Not here. Less than that in Bombay. Manuel, that equal ration is a fiction. Half the food on this planet is in the black market, or is not reckoned through one ruling or another. Or they keep two sets of books, and figures submitted to the FN have nothing to do with the economy. Do you think that grain from Thailand and Burma and Australia is correctly reported to the control board by Great China? I'm sure that the India representative on that food board doesn't. But India keeps quiet because she gets the lion's share from Luna, and then plays politics with hunger, a phrase you may remember, by using our grain to control her elections. Kerala had a planned famine last year. Did you see it in the news?" "No." "Because it wasn't in the news. A managed democracy is a wonderful thing, Manuel, for the managers, and its greatest strength is a free press, when free is defined as responsible and the managers define what is irresponsible. Do you know what Luna needs most? More ice. A news system that does not bottleneck through one channel. Our friend Mike is our greatest danger.
Huh? Don't you trust Mike?
Manuel, on some subjects I don't trust even myself. Limiting the freedom of news just a little bit is in the same category with the classic example, a little bit pregnant. We are not yet free, nor will we be as long as anyone, even our ally, Mike, controls our news. Someday I hope to own a newspaper independent of any source or channel. I would happily set print by hand, like Benjamin Franklin.
I give up.
Prof, suppose these talks fail and grain shipments stop. What happens? People back home will be vexed with this, and many here on Terra would die. Have you read Malthus?
Don't think so.
Many would die. Then a new stability would be reached with somewhat more people. More efficient people, and better fed. This planet isn't crowded. It is just mismanaged. And the unkindest thing you can do for a hungry man is to give him food. Give. Read Malthus. It is never safe to laugh at Dr. Malthus. He always has the last laugh. A depressing man. I'm glad he's dead. But don't read him until this is over. Too many facts hamper a diplomat, especially an honest one.
I'm not especially honest.
But you have no talent for dishonesty, so your refuge must be ignorance and stubbornness. You have the latter. Try to preserve the former. For the nonce, lad, Uncle Bernardo is terribly tired.
I said, sorry, and wheeled out of his room.
Prof was hitting too hard a pace. I would have been willing to quit if would ensure his getting into a ship and out of that gravity. But traffic stayed one way. Grain barges, not else. But Prof had fun. As I left and waved lights out, noticed again a toy he had bought, one that delighted him like a kid on Christmas. A brass cannon. A real one from sailing ship days. Was small, barrel about half a meter long, and messing with wooden carriage, only kilos 15. A signal gun, its paper said. Reeked of ancient history. Pirates, men walking plank. A pretty thing, but I asked Prof why. If we ever managed to leave, price to lift that mast to Luna would hurt. I was resigned to abandoning a peace suit with years more wear in it. Abandon everything but two left arms and a pair of shorts. If pressed, might give up social arm. If very pressed, would skip shorts. He reached out and stroked shiny barrel.
Manuel, once there was a man who held a political make-work job, like so many here in this directorate, shining brass cannon around a courthouse.
Why would courthouse have cannon?
Never mind. He did this for years. It fed him and let him save a bit. But he was not getting ahead in the world. So one day he quit his job, drew out his savings, bought a brass cannon, and went into business for himself.
Sounds like idiot.
No doubt. And so were we when we tossed out the warden. Manuel, you'll outlive me. When Luna adopts a flag, I would like it to be a cannon, or on field sable, crossed by bar sinister gules of our proudly ignoble lineage. Do you think it could be managed?
Suppose so, if you'll sketch. But why a flag, not a flagpole in all Luna?
It can fly in our hearts. A symbol for all fools so ridiculously impractical as to think they can fight City Hall.
Will you remember, Manuel?
Sure. That is, we'll remind you when time comes.
Didn't like such talk. He had started using oxygen tent in private, but would not use in public.
Guess I'm ignorant and stubborn. Was both in place called Lexington, Kentucky, in central managerial area. One thing no doctrine about, no memorized answers, was life in Luna. Prof said to tell truth and emphasize homely, warm, friendly things, especially anything different. Remember, Manuel, the thousands of Terrans who have made short visits to Luna are only a tiny fraction of 1%. To most people, we will be as weirdly interesting as strange animals in a zoo. Do you remember that turtle on exhibition in Old Dome? That's us. Certainly did. They wore that insect out, staring at. So when this male-female team started quizzing about family life in Luna, was happy to answer. I pitted it only by what I left out. Things that aren't family life, but poor substitutes in a community overloaded with males. Luna City is homes and families mainly. Dull by Terra standards, but I like it. Another warns much same. People who work and raise kids and gossip and find most of their fun around dinner table. Not much to tell, so I discussed anything they found interesting. Every Luna custom comes from Terra, since that's where we all came from. But Terra is such a big place that a custom from Micronesia, say, may be strange in North America. This woman, can't call her lady, wanted to know about various sorts of marriage. First, was it true that one could get married without a license on Luna? I asked what a marriage license was. Her companion said, Skip it, Mildred. Pioneer societies never had marriage licenses.
But don't you keep records?
She persisted. Certainly, I agreed. My family keeps a family book that goes back almost to first landing at Johnson City. Every marriage, birth, death, every event of importance, not only in direct line, but all branches so far as we can keep track. And besides, is a man, a schoolteacher, going around copying old family records all over our warren, writing a history of Luna City. A hobby.
But don't you have official records? Here in Kentucky, we have records that go back hundreds of years.
Madam, we haven't lived there that long.
Yes, but, well, Luna City must have a city clerk. Perhaps you call him county recorder, the official who keeps track of such things, deeds and so forth?
I said, don't think so, madam. Some bookies do notary work, witnessing chops on contracts, keeping records of them. It's for people who don't read and write and can't keep old records. But never heard of one asked to keep record of marriage. Not saying couldn't happen, but haven't heard.
How delightfully informal. Then this other rumor about how simple it is to get a divorce on the moon, I dare say that's true too?
No, madam. Wouldn't say divorce is simple. Too much to untangle. Take a simple example. One lady, and say she has two husbands.
Two?
Might have more, might have just one. Or might have complex marriage. But let's take one lady and two men as typical. She decides to divorce one. Say it's friendly, with other husband agreeing and one she is getting rid of not making fuss. Not that it would do him any good. Okay, she divorces him. He lives. Still leaves endless things. Men might be business partners, co-husbands often are. Divorce may break up partnership. Money matters to settle. These three may own Cubic together, and while will be in her name, ex-husband probably has cash coming or rent. And almost always are children to consider. Support and so forth. Many things. No, madam, divorce is never simple. Can divorce him in 10 seconds, but may take 10 years to straighten out loose ends. Isn't it much that way here?
Just forget I ever asked that question, Colonel. It may be simpler here.
She did talk that way, but was understandable once I got program. Won't spell it again.
But if that is a simple marriage, what is a complex one?
Found self-explaining polyandries, clans, groups, lines, and less common patterns considered vulgar by conservative people such as my own family. Deal my mother set up, say, after she ticked off my old man. Though didn't describe that one. Mother was always too extreme. Woman said,
You have me confused. What is the difference between a lion and a clan?
Quite different. Take on case. I have honored to be member of one of the oldest lion marriages in Luna. And in my prejudiced opinion, best. You asked about divorce. Our family has never had one, and we'll bet long odds never will. A lion marriage increases in stability year after year. Gains practice in art of getting along together, until notion of anybody leaving is unthinkable. Besides, takes unanimous decision of all wives to divorce a husband. Could never happen. Senior wife would never let it get that far. Went on describing advantages. Financial security, fine home life it gives children, fact that death of a spouse, while tragic, could never be tragedy it was in a temporary family, especially for children. Children simply could not be orphaned. Suppose I wax too enthusiastic, but my family is most important thing in my life. Without them, I'm just one-armed mechanic who could be eliminated without causing a draft. Here's why he's stable, I said. Take my youngest wife, 16. Likely to be in her 80s before his senior wife. Doesn't mean all wives senior to her will die by then. Unlikely in Luna. Femmes seem to be immortal. But may all opt out of family management by then. By our family traditions, they usually do, without younger wives putting pressure on them. So Ludmilla...
Ludmilla?
Ruski name. From Fairy Tale? Mila will have over 50 years of good example before has to carry burden. She's sensible to start with, not likely to make mistakes, and if did, has other wives to steady her. Self-correcting, like a machine with proper negative feedback. A good line marriage is immortal. Expect mine to outlast me at least 1,000 years. And is why I shan't mine die when time comes. Best part of me will go on living. Prof was being wheeled out. He had them stop stretcher cart and listen. I turned to him. Professor, I said, you know my family. Would mind telling this lady why it's a happy family, if you think so? It is, agreed Prof. However, I would rather make a more general remark. Dear madam, I gather you find our lunar marriage custom somewhat exotic.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far, she said hastily. Just somewhat unusual.
They arise, as marriage customs always do, from economic necessities of the circumstances. And our circumstances are very different from those here on Earth. Take the line type of marriage which my colleague has been praising. And justifiably, I assure you, despite his personal bias, I am a bachelor and have no bias. Line marriage is the strongest possible device for conserving capital and ensuring the welfare of children. The two basic societal functions for marriage everywhere. In an environment in which there is no security, neither for capital nor for children, other than that devised by individuals. Somehow human beings always cope with their environments. Line marriage is a remarkably successful invention to that end. All other lunar forms of marriage serve that same purpose, though not as well. He said goodnight and left. I had with me, always, a picture of my family, newest one, our wedding with Wyoming. Brides are at their prettiest, and Wyo was radiant. And rest of us looked handsome and happy, with Grandpa tall and proud, and not showing failing faculties. But was disappointed. They looked at it oddly. But man, Matthews, name was, said,
Can you spare this picture, Colonel?
Winced. Only copy I have, and a long way from home.
For a moment, I mean. Let me have it photographed, right here. It need never leave your hands.
Oh, certainly. Not a good picture of me, but his face I have. And did Wyatt justice, and they just don't come prettier than Lenore. So he photographed it, and next morning they did come right into our hotel suite
and woke me before time, and did arrest me, and take me away, wheelchair and all, and did lock me in a cell with bars, for bigamy, for polygamy, for open immorality, and publicly inciting others to same. Was glad Mum couldn't see. 19.
Took Stu all day to get case transferred to an FN court and dismissed. His lawyers asked to have it tossed out on diplomatic immunity, but FN judges did not fall into trap, merely noted that alleged offenses had taken place outside jurisdiction of lower court, except alleged inciting, concerning which they found insufficient evidence.
Aren't any FN laws covering marriage?
Can't be. Just a rule about each nation required to give full faith and credence to marriage customs of other member nations.
Out of those 11 billion people, perhaps 7 billion lived where polygamy is legal. And Stu's opinion manipulators played up persecution. It gained us sympathy from people who otherwise would never have heard of us. Even gained it in North America and other places where polygamy is not legal, from people who believed in live and let live. All good, because always problem was to be noticed. To most of those bee-swarm billions, Luna was nothing. A rebellion hadn't been noticed. Stu's operators had gone to much thought to plan setup to get me arrested. Was not told until weeks later after time to cool off and see benefits. Took a stupid judge, a dishonest sheriff, and barbaric local prejudice, which I triggered with that sweet picture, for Stu admitted later that range of color in Davis' family was what got Judge angry enough to be foolish, even beyond native talent for nonsense. My one consolation, that Mom could not see my disgrace, turned out mistaken. Pictures, taken through bars and showing grim face, were in every Luna paper, and write-ups used nastiest, earth-side stories. Not larger number that deployed injustice. But should have had more faith in Mimi. She wasn't ashamed. Simply wanted to go Earthside and rip some people to pieces. While helped Earthside, greatest good was in Luna. Lunas became more unified over this silly ho-ho than had ever been before. They took it personally, and Adam Celine and Simon Jester pushed it. Lunas are easygoing, except on one subject. Women. Every lady felt insulted by Terran news stories. Some male loonies who had ignored politics suddenly discovered I was their boy. Spinox, all lags feel superior to those not transported. Later found self greeted by ex-cons with, "Hi, jailbird." A lodge greeting. I was accepted. But saw nothing good about it then. Pushed around, treated like cattle. Fingerprinted, photographed, given food we wouldn't offer hogs, exposed to endless indignity, and only that heavy field kept me from trying to kill somebody. Had I been wearing number 6 arm when grabbed, might have tried. But steadied down once I was freed. Hour later we were on way to Agra. Had at last been summoned by committee. Felt good to be back in suite in Maharaja's palace. But 11-hour zone change in less than 3 did not permit rest. We went to hearing bleary-eyed and held together by drugs. Hearing, was one-sided. We listened while chairman talked. Talked an hour. I'll summarize. Our preposterous claims were rejected. Lunar Authority's sacred trust could not be abandoned. Disorders on Earth's moon could not be tolerated. Moreover, recent disorders showed that authority had been too lenient. Omission was now to be corrected by an activist program, a 5-year plan in which all phases of life in authority's trusteeship would be overhauled. A code of laws was being drafted. Civil and criminal courts would be instituted for benefit of client employees, which meant all persons in trust area. Not just consignees with uncompleted sentences. Public schools would be established, plus indoctrinal adult schools for client employees in need of same. An economic, engineering, and agricultural planning board would be created to provide fullest and most efficient use of Moon's resources and labor of client employees.
an interim goal of quadrupling grain shipments in 5 years, had been adopted as a figure easily obtainable once scientific planning of resources and labor was in effect. First phase would be to withdraw client employees from occupations found not to be productive and put them to drilling a vast new system of farm tunnels in order that hydroponics would commence in them not later than March 2078. These new giant farms would be operated by Lunar Authority, scientifically, and not left to whims of private owners. It was contemplated that this system would, by end of five-year plan, produce entire new grain quota. In meantime, client employees producing grain privately would be allowed to continue. But they would be absorbed into new system as their less efficient methods were no longer needed. Chairman looked up from papers. In short, the lunar colonies are going to be civilized and brought into managerial coordination with the rest of civilization. Distasteful as this task has been, I feel, speaking as a citizen rather than as a chairman of this committee, I feel that we owe you thanks for bringing to our attention a situation so badly in need of correction. Was ready to burn his ears off. Client employees? What a fancy way to say slaves. But Prof said tranquilly, I find the proposed plans most interesting. Is one permitted to ask questions, purely for information? For information, yes. North American member leaned forward. But don't assume that we are going to take any back talk from you cavemen. So mind your manners. You aren't in the clear on this, you know. Order, Chairman said. Proceed, Professor. This term, client employee, I find intriguing. Can it be stipulated that the majority of inhabitants of Earth's major satellite are not undischarged consignees, but free individuals? Certainly, Chairman agreed blandly. All legal aspects of the new policy have been studied. With minor exceptions, some 91% of the colonists have citizenship, original or derived, in various member nations of the Federated Nations. Those who wish to return to their home countries have a right to do so. You will be pleased to learn that the authority is considering a plan under which loans for transportation can be arranged, probably under supervision of International Red Cross and Crescent. I might add that I myself am heartily backing this plan, as it renders nonsensical any talk about slave labor. He smiled smugly. I see, agreed Prof. Most humane. Has the committee, or the authority, pondered the fact that most, effectively all, I should say, considered the fact that inhabitants of Luna are physically unable to live on this planet? That they have undergone involuntary permanent exile through irreversible physiological changes and can never again live in comfort and health in a gravitational field 6 times greater than that to which their bodies have become adjusted? Scoundrel pursed his lips as if considering totally new idea. Speaking again for myself, I would not be prepared to stipulate that what you say is necessarily true. It might be true of some, might not be others. People will vary widely. Your presence here proves that it is not impossible for a lunar inhabitant to return to Earth. In any case, we have no intention of forcing anyone to return. We hope that they will choose to stay, and we hope to encourage others to emigrate to the moon. But these are individual choices, under the freedoms guaranteed by the Great Charter. But as to this alleged physiological phenomenon, it is not a legal matter. If anyone deems it prudent or thinks he would be happier to stay on the moon, that is privilege. I see, sir. We are free. Free to remain in Luna and work, at tasks and for wages set by you, or free to return to Earth and die. Chairman shrugged. You assume that we are villains. We're not.
Why, if I were a young man, I would immigrate to the moon myself. Great opportunities. In any case, I am not troubled by your distortions. History will justify us.
Was surprised at Prof. He was not fighting. Worried about him. Weeks of strain and a bad night on top. All he said was,